control.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Well, good morning, and thank you for joining us here on Education Nation. I'm your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's such a pleasure to join you every Saturday morning to talk about educational topics. And I am joined once again in studio by my co-host and producer of Education Nation, Mark Durkin.
And another good morning to you, Rebecca. Yes. The weather's finally consistently nice after all that rain we got over the last week.
Isn't that wonderful? It's wonderful to be able to feel like we are moving into the summer months here. And we've got another exciting show for you today. We are going to be wrapping up our series on the controversial state Blaine amendments that have served as a thorn in the side of school choice advocates and forthcoming legislation. And this all began more than 100 years ago when public schools were thoroughly Protestant rather than secular. And Protestant lawmakers and public schools sought to keep public funds away from Catholic schools and deny them the right to freely exercise their religious beliefs through the building of their own schools. Despite the failed effort to pass a federal Blaine Amendment back then, 29 states by 1890 had adopted the language of the federal proposal. Then soon after, the sentiments of Catholic bigotry soon expanded to bigotry against people of all faiths and eventually would apply to school choice programs to exclude students who wished to attend the religious school of their choice. So despite this discrimination, the school choice movement somehow manages to continue to grow, and the courts are weighing in on the divisive nature of these unconstitutional amendments.
And joining us today by telephone from Arlington, Virginia, to discuss the legality or lack thereof of these state amendments is attorney Erica Smith from the Institute of Justice. Erica litigates cutting-edge constitutional cases protecting school choice and free speech, just to name a few. Her school choice work has been giving parents the opportunity to guide the education of their children. She joins us this morning to share what is going on in the courts and to share the advances that school choice is making in the face of discrimination. We are so honored to welcome Erica Smith to Education Nation. Good morning, Erica.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we're glad to have you on the show today, Erica.
Absolutely. Now, as you have written and you have put a scholarly essay piece together that I had a chance to take a look at and to gather some of the research for today, over the last 25 years, the school choice movement, it has gained significant momentum. I believe 28 states, including D.C., have some 58 total school choice programs serving more than a million children. You know, we touched on this on our show last week, but in your estimation, despite longstanding state Blaine Amendment legislation, why are school choice programs becoming so popular?
Well, the school choice movement started in 1991 in Milwaukee, and you're right, ever since then, they have just picked up so much momentum. And I think the reason for that is because parents and legislatures understand the power of choice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Education is not one size fits all. It shouldn't be one size fits all.
Right.
But that's kind of how the current public school system works.
Mm-hmm.
What school choice programs do is they allow parents to customize an education for their child and pick an education that best fits their child's individual needs.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, parents are going to be in a much better position to do that than a government bureaucrat.
Right,
absolutely.
Right. Yep.
What are some of the specific preferences, in your estimation, of why parents are choosing private religious schools, say, over private secular schools?
I would say it's for both non-religious reasons and religious reasons.
Okay.
Religious schools have such a wonderful reputation for both academics and discipline.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of great non-religious private schools out there, but many of them use alternative teaching methods like the Montessori schools or the Waldorf schools.
Mm-hmm.
And in contrast, a lot of religious schools still use the traditional teaching methods that some families just prefer.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you have a lot of religious families who just, they want to send their child to a religious school to help reinforce the same values that they're teaching those children at home.
Right. And why shouldn't they be able to have, you know, they should be able to have a choice to have that faith-based education just like everyone else, and or just like those who don't want it. And we're going to be talking more about that as we go through the show, that really this idea that we can't have religious schools right. as part of the school choice movement is really unconstitutional.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. Yeah. And it's also important to remember that a lot of people want to send their children to religious schools, even if they themselves are not religious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they recognize the values that these schools are teaching are good ones,
mm-hmm.
even if they don't agree with everything that they're teaching.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, it sounds like, really, I mean, even the blockade of it all is just coming from one side. I mean, people that want to send their kids to religious schools, you never, ever hear them speak about wanting to shut down or stop people from going to public schools.
Right, right. Never goes that direction, does it? Well, Erica, despite the popularity of school choice programs as they're growing in spite of this whole movement against it, there has been a lot of opposition. And in your litigation experience, can you share with us who those opponents to school choice are and the basis of their argument in trying to block school choice programs?
Sure, absolutely. So my organization, the Institute for Justice, we're a national nonprofit law firm, and we've helped litigate in over 25 school choice cases since we were founded.
Yeah.
And it's almost always the people that are bringing these lawsuits against the school choice programs are teachers unions or public school districts. And it's because, you know, frankly, they don't want the competition. They
right.
like having a monopoly over the school system,
right.
and they don't want the competition. But of course, they don't say that.
No.
When they bring lawsuits against school choice programs, the most common claim that they bring is that the program violates the separation of church and state by allowing parents to choose a private school, which may be a religious private school.
Mm-hmm. Though yet the funding isn't actually going to the school, it's actually going to the parents.
And that's right.
So it's a misnomer.
That's exactly why a lot of, or the overwhelming majority of courts to have considered these arguments have rejected them.
Mm-hmm.
Because school choice programs are not designed to aid schools. They're designed to aid families.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit more about the SCOTUS decision from the 2002? I understand that they did reject the argument that it is a problem for separation of church and state. And I don't know much about that case. Could you talk about that?
Sure. So that was that's the U.S. Supreme Court decision from 2002, Zelman versus Simmons-Harris, and
mm-hmm.
my law firm actually helped litigate that case.
Okay.
And what happened there was you had a scholarship program, a voucher program in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
and it allowed parents, like almost all school choice programs do, it allowed parents to choose either a religious school or a non-religious school to use their scholarship,
mm-hmm.
And it was challenged. And the challenge that the plaintiffs brought there was that it violated the Establishment Clause,
mm-hmm.
which is where the concept of separation of church and state comes from,
mm-hmm.
and that's in the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And now the court rejected that argument and found that school choice programs are perfectly constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
They don't violate the separation of church and state as long as two things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's that the parents are the ones choosing the school, whether it be religious or not religious,
mm-hmm.
and that they actually and that the program actually provides that choice. You need a program, like you couldn't have a program that only allowed parents to go to religious school.
Sure.
So as long as the program is neutral and it has that choice, and parents are freely making that choice,
mm-hmm.
then it is perfectly constitutional under the federal constitution.
Mm-hmm. You know, it is such a relief to hear that, and you know, there's not many of us out here who actually know about that case, and so the general public, I think, is even uninformed on this in general and thinks that, oh yeah, if the state says, well, that's violating church and state, I think most people buy into that and think, oh yeah, it probably does. And so I think it's not only is this an important case, but it's important for us to get word out about this, because I think that if general population understood that if they were to really kind of put their effort into getting school choice programs that would allow for religious schools as well, I think we'd get more energy behind it if they actually thought there was a chance, because I think so many people just assume there isn't a chance.
Well, it is a tricky issue, because even though the Supreme Court found that school choice was constitutional under the federal constitution, there's still the separate issue of whether it's constitutional under the state constitution.
Sure. Right.
And you have to go by each separate state constitution.
Okay.
Now, fortunately, it is school choice programs are constitutional in the overwhelming majority of states under their state constitutions, and we have worked on this for past 25 years. But there are still some, you know, question marks, some state courts that still haven't interpreted their own constitution. And the really tricky thing that we hear over and over again are what's called, well, as you guys have been talking about, Blaine Amendments.
The Blaine Amendments.
Right.
And that's where I was going to go with you next. Yeah. That's what they have turned to. The opponents of school choice have turned to the Blaine Amendments to try to push out or keep out any school choice movements, or at least the religious part of the school choice movements.
Right.
And they talk about the use of public funds to aid sectarian institutions. And we have talked about this in the last couple of shows, but why don't you explain how school choice proponents have used the term aid to their advantage in successfully defending against these? Maybe you could first talk about what that actually means, the word aid, and then how that's been used for school choice.
Sure, sure. So I'll just back up a moment and say that school choice opponents have always tried to use Blaine Amendments to sue school choice programs. But after the Zelman decision, after the U.S. Supreme Court foreclosed using the federal constitution to bring these challenges, we have seen more and more Blaine Amendment challenges.
Okay.
Just in the past 10 years, there's been about a dozen lawsuits challenging school choice programs under Blaine Amendments.
Wow.
And I think we've been involved in each and every one of them.
So
fortunately, almost all of these lawsuits have failed. And the courts have found that these school choice programs are perfectly constitutional under the Blaine Amendment. And that's in large part because what the Blaine Amendments actually say. What they generally say is that the state cannot use public funds to aid religious organizations, including religious schools. And the courts have correctly found that that word, their aid, is critical because the school choice programs are not aiding religious schools, they're aiding families. I mean, if you think about it, it's just the way we use the word aid in normal language. It's, we use it to talk about, you know, charity and donations. But when you're paying for tuition at a private school, you're not giving aid to the school, you're just paying for services rendered.
Right.
So the school is not aiding at all. They're just getting paid for educating your children. And the courts have correctly recognized that, and that's why so many of these lawsuits have failed.
Oh, which is such fantastic news. You know, back when, I don't know if you learned from Mark, Erica, that I also run a private classical Christian school in this area called Liberty Classical Academy. And I remember back when we first started opening the school, and we're at such a disadvantage as a private school compared to even a charter school, which is part of the school choice movement, too. They can get so much, you know, so many dollars, even as a charter school. And private schools can get nothing, really, virtually nothing from the state. And I remember saying to several people, you know, it's so unfair that we have this idea of school choice, but yet if you want to choose a faith-based education, you really can't have that choice unless you're willing to pay twice, pay your taxes for your local school and pay your tuition as well.
That's
and,
right.
And so I'm just so thrilled to hear that these Blaine Amendment cases are failing, and I hope that we can see that happen continuously across the nation.
No, we absolutely agree. I mean, it's right now it's so sad when you have a state that doesn't have a school choice program, or or the program that they have is so limited and small, and you have pretty much the quality of a child's education being determined by how much money their parent has.
Right.
You know, either the parent is able to afford to move to a really good neighborhood where the public schools are good, or they have to, you know, try to scrape together the money to to go and pay private school tuition. And sometimes neither of those options are, or a lot of times, neither of those options are viable. And it's sad. And you have kids stuck in these, really terrible school districts.
Yep.
And there's really no way out. They're trapped.
Well, and that's what we have going on right here in the Twin Cities. You know, Minnesota doesn't have much of a... we have a school choice program in the sense that charter schools were founded here in Minnesota, and so we have a lot of charter school options. But when it comes to any type of a faith-based school, there is no funding for that at all. The only, I think you can get a tax credit up to $2,500 or something like that for not even tuition-related things. It has to be non-tuition. And there was some legislation moving through our legislature this year, and we had high hopes that it was actually going to make it to the governor's desk, and he would potentially sign it. We have a Republican held House and Senate and a Democrat governor who said nope, and the Republicans negotiated it away. And it's very frustrating because the Minneapolis public schools only have about a 50% graduation rate.
Oh,
and
it's terrible.
It's horrendous. And so we have all these kids who would benefit from a program like that, not to mention the middle class kids whose parents are trying to scrape the money together to send their kids to a decent school too. And yet, you know, that side tends to say, oh, we're, you know, we care about the kids when they want to do another capital campaign or something like that. But when it comes to school choice programs that would actually help the kids, that's when they shut the door. And
all the special interests get
the preference. The true colors come out when they shut down school choice options like that.
Oh, it's very true, and it's very sad. But the listeners should not give up hope for Minnesota, because we are actually fighting very hard to get a school choice legislation passed in Minnesota.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
Neither.
Yes, my colleague Lee McGrath is actually on the ground helping with that.
Fantastic.
And along with EdChoice, which is one of our allies, and we remain very hopeful that Minnesota will, maybe not this year, mm-hmm. but soon pass a school choice program.
That's fantastic. Keep up the hard work here.
Yes.
We appreciate that. Well, the proponents of the Blaine Amendment legislation haven't taken the losses of some of these court cases that you mentioned across the nation. They haven't taken that laying down. And so for the last couple of years, they have been coming against school choice programs by restricting the programs to students who wish to attend secular schools only and excluding kids who wish to attend religious schools. And that really is a blatant violation of the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment. I know that you, Erica, and your firm are currently fighting to protect school choice programs in Georgia and Montana. Can you share with us a little bit about your work in those two states and the circumstances surrounding those cases?
Sure. So this idea that you first mentioned of Blaine Amendments being used to restrict school choice programs, that's something that we've only seen in the last 5 years.
Hmm.
Before Blaine Amendments were almost exclusively used to just torpedo the school choice program totally.
Oh, okay.
So it would just never pass the legislature. The legislators would get afraid, and they wouldn't pass the program because they were afraid of a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
But now, in the past 5 years, we've seen three different contexts, school choice programs actually being limited to only serve families who are willing to attend non-religious private schools.
Hmm.
So this happened first in New Hampshire when it wasn't the legislature who did this. We actually had, it was a school choice program that served both families going to religious and non-religious schools.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had, the ACLU sued, and the trial court judge struck down the program, found it unconstitutional just for students attending religious schools.
Oh, my goodness. That is so blatantly against the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and that's what we argued. Unfortunately, the case, we won on appeal, but we won on a procedural grounds. The court just threw out the entire lawsuit, said that the ACLU just never, should improperly brought the lawsuit. So it never resolved the issue of whether excluding religious families like that violated the First Amendment. And then something very similar happened in Colorado, and we were involved in that case as well, which is still ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
And the third instance, which you asked about, in Montana, that's ongoing as well. So what happened in Montana, and this is very interesting,
mm-hmm.
you had the state legislature decided to enact this school choice program, and it was very good, and it included both students going to religious and non-religious schools.
Mm-hmm.
And the Department of Revenue then, just completely on its own, I mean, it was motivated by political pressure, unseen sure. forces, mm-hmm. decided to contradict the legislature's intent and huh. and restrict the program just to students attending non-religious schools.
And they could do that. They could just put a rule out there.
No, they
okay.
can't.
Okay, well, that's good. They tried, but
they tried.
That's where you come
trying.
In, right?
We sued them immediately.
Yeah, good.
And we suspected that they were going to do this, and the day that they enacted this rule, we brought a lawsuit on the same day. And, I mean, just
good for you.
But our clients in this case, it's heartbreaking because you really see the real effect that these arbitrary and unconstitutional laws have on real people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the lead client in that case, Kendra Espinoza, mm-hmm. she is a mom of two daughters. She was, you know, she was homeschooling the kids. Everybody was really happy. And unexpectedly, her husband just left them and abandoned them.
Oh.
And suddenly she had to, you know, get a job cleaning houses and, you know, just scrape together like everything she could, you know, to get a new home and to, you know, redo their entire lives. And she had to put the kids in public school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some public schools are good, and this one was not.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids were struggling, and it was not a good environment for them. And Kendra, she didn't know what to do. So what she did is she took on extra jobs. She worked, like, three jobs at that point.
Yeah.
And she actually got together a whole bunch of handmade quilts and auctioned them off. She held her own little auction just to raise tuition for her kids to go to this nearby religious school that's ranked one of the best
wow.
schools in the entire state of Montana.
Unbelievable.
And but the thing is she's not going to be able to do this every year, like
no.
hold charity drives to raise private
right.
school tuition. She shouldn't have to. So when Montana passed this school choice program, she was, you know, crying tears
yes.
of relief.
Uh-huh.
And but now, you know, the Department of Revenue came in and is trying to torpedo her chances of using that scholarship
yeah.
program. So
yeah.
we sued. And luckily, we were able to obtain a preliminary injunction from the trial court judge
good.
Who said, just as a, you know, preliminary manner, they're going to stop this rule going into effect, preserve the program as the legislature initially intended it, because the court found it was likely unconstitutional. But
yeah.
then the problem was we then got a new judge on the case. Our old judge retired. So
the drama.
I know, it's so much drama, and real lives are at stake here. And so now we're waiting for any day the new judge can issue a decision about whether this program restricted to just students going to non-religious schools is constitutional or not.
Yeah.
And either way, it will go up to the Montana Supreme
right.
Court.
Meanwhile,
so
your wonderful, sweet client and probably many like her are hanging in the balance. Their children are hanging in the balance.
Yeah, it's really incredible that it's gotten this far. So we are hoping, we are working very hard to make sure that the courts do the right thing and
yeah.
find that excluding religious families is absolutely unconstitutional.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what we're going to do real quick is we're going to take a very short time out. And when we come back with Erica Smith from the Institute of Justice, we're going to talk about the spirit behind the exclusion of religious options when it comes to school choice programs and also explain the central tenets of the religious clauses, such as government neutrality toward religion. Stay tuned. We'll be right back right after this short break.
We don't need no education.
And welcome back to Education Nation. I am your co-host, Mark Durkin, along with host Rebecca Hagstrom. We are joined over the telephone by attorney Erica Smith from the Institute of Justice in Arlington, Virginia, where we are continuing our discussion on the unconstitutionality of Blaine Amendments when it comes to the exclusion of religious options for school choice. And so even though lower courts have been split on whether the government can exclude religious options from student aid programs, the Supreme Court of the United States has an upcoming decision in the Trinity Lutheran case that may provide some clarity.
Yeah. Erica, could you explain what the Trinity Lutheran case involves and how this court case could potentially deal a death blow to the Blaine Amendment movement?
Sure. The Trinity Lutheran case is a very interesting one, and the Supreme Court just heard arguments in that case last month. So what happened there, it's not a school choice. The facts of the case don't involve a school choice program, but whatever the opinion the court has could have a lot of relevance for school choice cases.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, you have a church was running a daycare and decided to apply for a grant that would allow them to refurbish their playground for the daycare. And this grant was available to everybody. You know, people, playgrounds from, you know, all over the state were applying. And the state initially selected this church as having one of the best applications and being able to receive this grant. But the state then turned around and said, oh, actually, we just realized you're a church. So we don't think that you're going to be able to get this grant after all, because we think it would violate our, you guessed it, the Blaine Amendment.
Unbelievable. This bigoted Blaine Amendment back from the late 1800s.
Right, exactly, right? Still rearing its ugly head up today.
Yeah.
So the church sued and said that this violated their religious liberty rights under the Constitution, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. And it's so this case is now raising two very important questions. First, whether the government can exclude religious organizations from an otherwise generally available and neutral government benefit program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a situation where anybody can get this grant except religious groups,
mm-hmm.
and so or anyone can apply for the grant except religious
obvious,
groups.
Obvious, isn't it?
I think it's really obvious. And then the second issue is whether Missouri's Blaine Amendment itself is constitutional, because there's so much evidence on the record that, like with so many other Blaine Amendments, this Missouri's Blaine Amendment was initially passed out of Catholic bigotry.
Mm-hmm.
So if the church wins, the opinion will likely be very helpful to the school choice movement and provide very useful guidance. And when I actually attended the argument last month, and all the justices on the court were extremely hostile to the government's position
good.
On this.
That's
so,
wonderful.
So
good.
It looks like the church has a very good chance of winning. I mean, good. These things are hard to predict, but it's looking very good.
Right. Oh, that's great news, because that was one of the things we were going to ask you, is what
right,
you thought was
expect.
Going to be the outcome of that. Erica, we are going to have to wrap up. I could go on and on with you. I really enjoy having you on the show, and I hope that our listeners have been able to enjoy learning more about Blaine Amendments from you. And maybe we can invite you back another time to take this a little bit deeper, because I think you have a lot more that you'd like to share with us than we'd like to have shared with us. So we'll look forward to coming back next week, and we'll be joined again in studio by Mark Durkin. And we're also going to be having previous Senator David Han on to talk about what happened with school choice here in Minnesota at the end of the legislature. We will see you all again next Saturday. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.